Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is season 2, episode number 12. What a great day. What we're going to do right now is just take one quick pause, play our intro music, and kick this thing off the right way. So bear with us, and you're listening to Redbird Rants on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the official Redbird Rants podcast, season 2, episode number 12. I am Michael Miles, one of the co-editors at Redbird Rants, joined today by Christian May Suzuki. Christian, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. I mean, Cardinals could be doing a little bit better, but hey, I'll take it as it is.
Hey, absolutely, and we're going to definitely get into that. And Christian, this is a very special podcast. We are very lucky, very, very lucky to have back with us what we are calling our prodigal son, the one who ran away, who defected from us, went to the Brewers, but was actually serving as a spy for us over there, unbeknownst to anyone. But we are so excited to welcome back Trevor Huth, who is coming back to Redbird Rants and taking on the role of co-editor. As we lost our very good friend, Tito Rivera. He is still living. He is not dead, but he has left Redbird Rants because he has a new baby on his way. But Trevor, welcome back, my friend.
Thank you. It's great to be back where I started.
Man, what a journey, right? Before we get into anything, Christian, do you have anything you want to say to Trevor on his way back? Any memories you have or just anything like that to welcome him back?
Well, I'm glad you finally got smart and picked the right team, you know?
Yeah, the right opportunity had to open up.
And, Trevor, just let me tell you, from all of us at Redbird Rants, we're so excited to have you back. It was a tough day to lose Tito. He was, as you know, because you were with Tito and I as your editors, he was a great piece of us, and we are sad to see him go. But like I've said many times, we are now very overjoyed to have you with us. So thanks for coming back.
Yeah, certainly going to miss Tito. I remember when he started as a contributor too, actually. So hopefully I can just, you know, fill in and do a good job.
Well, for anyone who doesn't know, because many of you, our listeners, don't know the backside of our business, I want to tell you that Trevor came back in on fire, got pieces edited up and posted, and just great to have him back. From that, let's ask you a couple questions, Trevor. So what did you learn about the Brewers? Let's start there, about their fan base and just some of the things that you were writing about that were popular to Brewers.
Well, one of the things about the Brewers is kind of like the Cardinals. They have a pretty good farm system, and it's another organization where people tend to trust the GM. I mean, unless that's changed and Mosaic's not as trusted anymore. But David Stearns over in Milwaukee has done a really good job with some of the trades that he's made and getting some young guys. So they're going to be a young and exciting team in the NL Central for a while. You've seen a couple of the guys come up this year, but in the next couple of years, they're going to get full force and they're going to – it's going to be a fun NL Central for a lot of years. If you like competition, if you like the Cardinals blowing people out of the water, then you might want to stop watching baseball. So, other than that, I mean, it's kind of just, they're still the Brewers, I guess. They were in first place last year also and ended up not making the playoffs. So kind of just see what happens.
And, you know, one of the things that I've always poked some fun at the Brewers is Ryan Braun and, you know, the steroids and all. Any residual, you know, thoughts within the Brewer camp on that, or is he still seen as one of those great leaders?
No, he's been well forgiven for all the steroid stuff. A lot of people are starting to say he should be traded because he's an aging veteran and the team is so young, but he's got that no trade clause. So he's going to be a contract for the next 3 or 4 years, I think, for the Brewers. But for the most part, the fan base is still behind him and what he can do, especially after like game two of the year, he hit a walk-off home run, then did it again in game four or something along those lines.
Hey, tell us a few of the names that Cardinal fans should actually keep on the radar who are with the Brewers, you know, who could possibly do some damage within the NL Central.
Oh, yeah. The top name that comes to mind is Corbin Burnes. He's a right-handed pitcher. He hasn't made it to the majors yet. He's in AAA, but before this year, he hadn't had a career ERA over two, I'm fairly certain, if I'm remembering my numbers right, in the minors. And then he's, you know, pitching this year in Colorado, so that inflates his ERA a little bit, but it's still in the mid-threes. And he looks like he's going to be a really, really good pitcher for years to come. You're right about a team. You start to get some favorite players. He was one of my favorite prospects to come up, and I think he's going to be really good and definitely a guy to watch out for. Outside of that, middle infielder named Mauricio Dubon, who a lot of the Brewers fans thought were going to make it up this year, and he was on track to make it up this year. He had like a 22-game hitting streak going on. Then he tore his ACL, so he's out for the year. He'll return next year, and if he returns healthy, he'll be a very interesting middle infielder to watch.
So is there anybody with Milwaukee right now, this year, that should pose a very dramatic threat to the Cardinals in their efforts to find their way back to the top of the NL Central?
Not necessarily that I can think of. A lot of the guys are underperforming from what people thought they would. A lot of the guys are older veterans now who are for a veteran presence, but are – You know what you're going to get from those guys. They did just trade for Brad Miller from the Tampa Bay Rays, and he's got some pop from the left side, and that tends to play well in Milwaukee. So we'll see how he ends up with them. They've been having a lot of middle infield trouble, and that might be the answer, which means they can go out as the deadline approaches and go get starting pitching, which I think everybody in the MLB knows that they need.
All right, thanks, Trevor. We're going to shift gears just a little. I'm going to turn over to you, Christian. Talk to us about your thoughts on how the Cardinals have been doing of late. And you can reach back as far as you want to go, because the last time we recorded an episode of our podcast was back in the middle of May. So feel free to give us any reactions you've got going back to there, because I know that you've got some pretty strong opinions about how the Cardinals have been doing.
Well, I'm not going to reach back too far, actually, because there is a particular streak that the Cardinals are actually in the midst of that was really talked about for a while. 9 games or so against the bottom feeders of the league, the Miami, Cincinnati, and San Diego, and the Cardinals are .500. That is just unacceptable. This should have been the series that they rebounded off of. These are teams that are floundering, that can't score, that can't pitch very well outside of a very few number of names. I mean, these aren't good teams, and yet the Cardinals are struggling consistently against these teams. I mean, they can't really hold leads. I mean, you got guys giving up 11 runs. You got guys walking 11 people. I mean, something has got to – you guys got to step up. You cannot lose these kind of games that you're supposed to win. Now, let me – sorry, excuse me for drawing an analogy from another sport, but I am a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and Tottenham has never won the Premier League. And part of that reason is because a lot of the times against teams in the lower table, teams that are, you know, not very good and that they're supposed to win, they'll end up drawing against a lot of the times. And not being able to beat those teams that you're supposed to beat is just not a formula for success. So, I mean, they really have to prove that they can beat these bottom feeder teams. I think I said it before on the last podcast. We were talking about the Cardinals beating elite pitchers and going up against the elite pitchers of the league. And I said something like, well, they have to beat the bad pitchers first before we can talk about beating the elite pitchers. They got to beat the bad teams first before we can talk about them beating the good teams. So this streak right now, I mean, this was a 9-game streak where they were supposed to go, you know, 7-2, 8-1, 9-0. And we already have 3 losses.
And Christian, who do you attribute those losses to? Is it the arms, the pen, the offense? I mean, who do you point the fingers at?
I mean, for me, I feel like when it's one game, it's a lot easier to sort of attribute a loss to a certain person or to a certain thing. But there has been so much inconsistency in the way of just everything. You have one loss where they allowed 11 runs. You have one loss where they allowed 7 runs. I mean, you could call that pitching, but they only scored 7 runs total in those games, which is not very good either. So you could say the offense has something to do with it. You got a game against Cincy where they lost 6-3. You had Carlos Martinez walk, what, 7 or 8 people. You had Brett Cecil walk, like, 4 or 5 people. I mean, at the end of the day, everyone has to be held accountable for their part of the deal. This isn't just one man's problem. This is the entire team's problem, and the entire team has to come together and solve it.
So would you put any blame on Mike Matheny? And, of course, you guys know I have to ask that question.
Well, I mean, I wasn't going to go that far, but for certain situations, I mean, at the end of the day, if Carlos Martinez walks 7 guys, there's nothing that a Mike Matheny can do. If you have guys that are just blowing saves left and right, I mean, it's getting to a point where there hasn't been any real consistent arms, and it is sort of a matter of just picking out who you might think works that night. And you can argue that some of that lies on Matheny in that he hasn't really established any roles for a lot of people outside of maybe Jordan Hicks. But, I mean, the team hasn't really made it easy for him, too. I mean, a lot of these guys will get stuck in these spots they should perform in, and they just end up giving up hits somehow, making one bad pitch, and suddenly the whole game is turned on its ass. So, I mean, it's really, really hard to put it all on Matheny, but I think that the circumstances that sort of built up to this point, a lot of that has to do with him.
That was a fair point. Trevor, what do you think about what Christian just shared with us and about the Cardinals of late?
I can't really disagree with much that you said. When you're facing, you know, when you have those long stands against teams that are bottom of the barrel and are teams that you should beat, that phrase comes from a certain reason. You should be beating those teams. So it can get frustrating when you're not. And I can't speak too much about what Matheny has done, since I know that follow-up question's probably coming. But I have agreed with you in terms of John Mabry being at some blame for some of the hitting struggles that tend to happen. But beyond that, as far as the coaching staff goes, I – you're going to have to avoid those questions with me, at least for now. But it really is a little frustrating that they can't, you know, that they've won three games during this stretch against some of these teams. But also there are some good and surprising players, and those are always fun to talk about to bring some light to the Cardinals. Like, Miles Michaelis has been very reliable this year, and I'm not sure people knew that was coming. Michael Wacha is coming off a good outing or two. So I think that there are some positives to be seen, but overall it's hard to get excited about a team that's struggling a little bit against bottom of the barrel.
Well, here are my thoughts, and then we're going to take a quick break. But my thoughts, and I completely agree with both of you. I'm going to add more about the Matheny side because that's what I do. You know, Christian, again, say the numbers of how many walks Martinez allowed. Just give me the number.
Here. I'll pull that up for you.
It was
quite unattractive. It was a grand total of 7 people. And the Cardinals in general walked a total of 11.
11 walks from a team, 7 walks from your starter. How many walks did the pen allow? You said Cecil allowed
Cecil allowed 3 walks and Mayers allowed 1. So Cecil,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so the point of mentioning that is that's the sort of thing that, in my opinion, falls on the shoulders of, yes, the player, because he's not hitting his spot. But at the same time, I could understand you telling me that Martinez walked 4 and then was pulled, or Cecil walked 2 and then was pulled. That is the job of the pitching coach and the manager. And I think that while everything you both have said is 100% true, that there were players who did not perform to the levels that they should, that there is an offensive issue taking place here, and I want to get to that in just a minute. But at the end of it all, you have a manager and you have a pitching coach for a reason, and that reason is for them to catch when things are not going the way they should. And if Martinez is having a hard time finding the zone because he was rushed back from injury, and I certainly want us to have a moment to talk about that, then you have to, as a manager, recognize when he's in trouble out there. And I have to admit to you guys, I haven't had the opportunity of late to watch a lot of the games. I've listened to some of them on the radio, but I haven't had a chance to watch. And the reason I'm bringing that up is, Yadier Molina is every bit a manager on the field. And I appreciate the fact that Yadi oftentimes will call out the medical staff because of something he saw. And he'll also call out Matheny on things that he sees, meaning out to the field. And I'm concerned that we're not seeing that. And I don't know if that's from Yadi coming back from his injury. If I got hit in the junk with a foul ball off of a Jordan Hicks pitch, I'm going to be real honest. I'm not back at all. I'm going to have trouble walking, and I'm just so impressed that Yadier recovers in the way that he does and comes back. But all of that to say, I do place a huge heap of blame onto Mike Matheny for the fact that he just leaves guys out there too long when they may be in trouble, and he also does not and has not yet shown me that he knows in the least how to manage a bullpen. Now, quickly, I want to talk about John Mabry, and then we'll take our break. John Mabry, if there was never any more evidence to his need for being sent elsewhere, it is Marcell Ozuna. And the fact that Marcell Ozuna himself watched the videos and corrected his stance to get him back into the ways of hitting that he had down in Miami. And we're seeing some of that come back. We're seeing him actually become more comfortable at the plate and hitting with more authority. I think that as he continues to work on that, we will continue to see those numbers rise. But the reason I'm illustrating that point is that's John Mabry's job. That's Mabry's job to say, hey, I was watching the video of you from years back, and I've noticed that you changed your stance. Let's look at that. And there's no evidence that we have that has occurred at all. What do you think about that, Trevor?
That's Marcelo Zuna is the one that comes to mind. It was Randall Grichuk last year who they sent straight down to AAA, and he was coming back swinging the hottest bat I've ever seen once he got away from it. So, I definitely agree with you there, and there's not much more that I can really add to to that point.
Christian, any thoughts? A couple. I do agree with the idea of leaving the fact that Matheny left Carlos out a little too long. But, I mean, looking at it, I mean, he is supposed to be your ace. He's supposed to be the guy, and he walks seven people in 3.2 innings. I mean, he wasn't out there very long. The sheer walk volume was just completely insane. Now, if he is walking that much and he's coming off an injury, it is Matheny's job, unquestionably, to take him out. But still, if you're not feeling right, you can't let yourself get to seven walks that quickly and just let the game against a team as bad as Cincinnati and just let the game completely implode. But the John Mabry thing, I agree completely, because I think it's most evident in sort of the players that are that sort of pay attention to their batting, that are meticulous with their approach. Guys like Yadier Molina, guys like Marcelo Ozuna, who we were told was doing a lot of film study on his batting stance in order to sort of change it. Guys like Matt Carpenter, who are notoriously disciplined. Those are the only guys who have been even halfway successful in a way. Obviously, Matt Carpenter is a big difference. He's been kind of getting up, but Matt Carpenter just needs to stop pulling every ball. But the guys that aren't, you know, notorious for their love of the game, the guys that aren't, like, notorious for being very meticulous with their swing, being very meticulous with the way that they, you know, with the way they prepare, being very much into their improvement, those are the guys that haven't really done anything. You can sort of tell that the good players are playing good and the bad players are playing bad. And that's a sign that the coach isn't really doing much. And, I mean, that's kind of what's happening right now.
All right, guys, thanks for entertaining me with Fire Matheny and Fire Mabry. I'm sure we'll have many more discussions about that, and I'm sure I will write many more pieces that fans probably will not read because they're tired of hearing it. But that will happen. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take one quick break. When we come back from the break on the other side of the jump, we're going to talk about the passing of Red Shane Deese. So stick with us. You are listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is Season 2, Episode number 12. We'll be right back after the break. You are listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast, Season 2, Episode 12. I'm Michael Miles, co-editor at Redbird Rants, joined today by my co-editor, Trevor Huth, and one of our greatest contributors, Christian May Suzuki. And guys, right before the break, I teased that we were going to come back and talk about the passing of Red Shane Deese. And that was a huge moment within the Cardinals family and organization this past week. Christian, I'm going to start with you. What are your thoughts? What does your heart tell you about the passing of Red Shane Deese and any memories that you have about the great Cardinal of yesteryear?
Well, I'm not going to lie. I don't particularly have a lot of memories of him, seeing as he was an old man when my father was born. So, personally, I don't have a lot of memories. Obviously, he was it's very emotional in that he's one of the last of an era to really go. I mean, he was one of the last players that was really a Cardinal at heart, that was around with Stan the Man Musial. And his death sort of signifies the end of that era. And that's, I mean, that was one of the greatest eras in Cardinals baseball, despite the fact that they weren't particularly successful in the postseason sometimes. I mean, you had some of the greats like Slaughter and Musial, obviously, and those were some talented teams. So to see that era sort of vanish from the earth it's a very sad moment.
Trevor, any thought?
I mean, any time that one of the great players in the game of baseball in general, and you know, for a specific team like the Cardinals goes, it just it reminds me of just some of the greats that have come before them. You talk about Mutual and Lou Brock and Ozzie Smith, and even though you know they aren't all necessarily the same era, it makes you think of how many good players the Cardinals have actually really had in their organization over the last years. It's sad to see him go, and it really is the end of that era in many ways. So I don't know. It's sad, but it made me just think of the volumes of really good talent the Cardinals have had over the course of their organization.
Yeah, guys, I agree with you all. Let me tell you, Christian, I don't have a lot of personal memories of him either. Certainly, I was not alive when he was in his heyday or playing, but I do have memories of his consistent appearance at Cardinal spring training. The images burned into my brain are of Red Shane Deese riding around in the golf cart, even back in the Tony La Russa days, and being there to give some sage advice to young players. I think that there was a great picture, if I'm remembering correctly, from not this spring training, but the spring training before, where Red is standing there talking at length with Luke Weaver. And if you remember, not this spring training, but the one before, Weaver was hot off the press. He was so new into spring training. I believe that was also the year that Wainwright got him a car, rent him a car, and all these players had taken this young arm under their wing, including Red Shane Deese. And Red knew the game inside and out. And I'm fearful now that that level of expertise, that level of knowledge may be absent in the coming spring trainings, in the coming off season, even during the season itself, because we know that Red was very much involved in conversations. Now, what's interesting to me is, and Russ, one of our writers, Russ, he wrote a really great piece on the passing of Red and then also now the passing of the baton. That now signals to me that the generation of Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee and all of those players who are now connected still with the team, the Jose Oquendos, all of those now take on the banner and the torch of the oldest generation, you know, the Mike Shannons. And we know Mike Shannon's health is even not doing so well. So it's just an interesting passing of the baton. And, you know, can those guys step up to the level that Shane Deese did? So I guess we'll see, you know. What I'd like for us to do now is let's transition a little into discussing some players who have found their way back to the disabled list and perhaps they shouldn't. And I'd like to start with Alex Reyes. Let me tell you guys, just as we dive into this, that I was so lucky to be present at the Memphis Redbirds game on his final rehab start. And I have to tell you that that was without a doubt Hall of Fame pitching that I was able to watch. I mean, the man was effortless. The number of strikeouts he racked up, the number of swing and misses he racked up, the number of scoreless innings that he racked up. And I also had the chance to talk with him after that start and to stand there with Alex Reyes, and he was not at all winded. I mean, yes, sweating because it was a warm day, but not at all winded. Just seemed so ready to come back. So I myself was a little disappointed in what happened with him in that start and his return to the disabled list. But Trevor, let's start with you. You were covering the Brewers still at the time, but I know that you stayed connected with all of us at the Cardinals. And what do you think about Reyes coming back, pitching as he did, and then heading right back to the DL?
I mean, it shows that even through injury, he was pitching really well, like you were saying, in his rehab. And you know, I was hearing good things about his rehab. He came back and he pitched four innings, got two strikeouts this year before he required another surgery. So I don't think it really speaks much to his talent level, and I think everybody knows his talent level is there. I think the question is more going to be what his future is. He's clearly got some injury issues, considering he's thrown four innings in the last 2 years, and he's had two surgeries. So
I might explore him maybe as a bullpen option in the future, as a late inning bullpen option. But he can definitely be a starter if he can stay healthy, and that's going to be the biggest question going forward. I don't think that for a second that I or anybody else should be questioning the fact that he is the real deal. That's for sure. It's just a matter of how healthy can he be and where is he going to fit in best through these surgeries.
Christian, any thoughts on Reyes, his rehabs, and then that one fateful game?
I mean, it was pretty surprising to me, honestly. His rehab starts look good, and I actually was watching him that game. It was very surprising because he didn't seem to pitch with any hitch at all. There was no real noticeable mechanic change. His arm wasn't flying out or anything like that. But what happened was that he suddenly went from, it was probably around, he was floating around 95, 96 mile an hour fastball. One inning, it suddenly dropped to 91, 92. And I was surprised and I was a little bit concerned. But like I said, there was no real mechanical issue. It just seemed like he was sort of slowing it down. But they ended up pulling him, and I was honestly kind of surprised they did that too. And suddenly he tore something in his lat. And I mean, I don't know. It just seems like when it rains, it pours for the Cardinals this year and the injury scenarios. I mean, I did not see it coming at all. I honestly thought it was just a little irritation. I mean, it certainly didn't look like he was pitching like he had something torn in his lat. He looked fine besides the velocity. So, I mean, it really, really surprises me that the injury was as bad as it was.
You know, it really does beg the question, right? I mean, how trusting are either one of you, both of you, how trusting are you in the Cardinals medical staff based on everything that's happened this season? Let's start with you, Christian.
I mean, it's weird. I mean, it's hard to trust them with some of the things, but at the same time, you have people like Carlos Martinez is holding back the extent of their injuries to the medical staff and to the Cardinals. And I mean, that can be traced to two things, in my opinion. A, it's a distrust of the medical team itself, which would obviously be really bad and would therefore need the prompt replacement of that team. Or B, the players don't really, the front office or the management of the team. And I mean, that could definitely be something too. So I don't know. Obviously, the couple of the injuries are something that you can't really avoid. There are things like this Carlos Martinez thing that we'll probably talk about. I mean, you kind of have to think, like, what's really going on? And we don't really know what's going on, so it's hard for me to pass judgment.
You're always so diplomatic, Christian, and we appreciate you for that. Trevor, any thoughts on what Christian shared?
I agree with a lot of it, and I don't know necessarily, though, that at least for Alex Reyes, that the medical staff is at blame. I mean, if it's really true that his mechanics didn't change and all there was a drop in velocity, that's more of a freak thing than anything else. I know when he went out last year, I was still writing for Redbird Rants, and I looked at his mechanics, and there were a few places that I thought that he was susceptible to arm injuries. So I'm not sure that in Alex Reyes' case, that it's necessarily the medical team's fault. But in terms of Carlos Martinez and things along that nature, it is hard to pass judgment on these guys. I want to give an answer that's not diplomatic, but it is really hard because these guys are paid to be competitive and they don't want to miss any time. They don't want to not play. So it gets really hard to do their job when things like that happen.
Yeah, and I agree with both of you. And I want to circle back on one of those points here in just a second. But before we do, I want to say if there's anyone who did not read that post that Trevor wrote, you know, a year ago, I encourage you to go look at it. It looks at three specific places in Reyes's motion that, you know, gave cause for concern during the analysis. And Trevor, it's a phenomenal piece, and I really hope people go and look it up. In fact, what we'll probably do is I'll probably get that tweeted out again from us just so that people can go look at it, because I think there's a lot of truth in what's in there. And I love what you said, that you're not so certain that those elements that you highlighted a year ago are the cause or the root for this setback. Because I think in your piece, if I'm remembering correctly, you're looking more less at lat damage and more at elbow and shoulder and that sort of thing. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, that's right. I mean, it was an elbow injury, so I was focused on where his elbow was open to some damage.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just phenomenal because you go from looking at the load to the turn to, you know, his release point and all of that. It's just really an incredible piece, and I hope people will go and look at it. But I'd like to circle back now to something that Christian actually said. You know, and the two points that you made, Christian, which I think are of great value, you know, the one is the distrust of the medical staff, or the second is the distrust of the management. You know, we could banter all day long about the distrust of the medical staff, and maybe that exists and maybe it doesn't. You know, when I think back historically on the Cardinals and the injuries they had in the past, they haven't changed medical staff in a couple of years. I do recall them changing completely at one point, maybe 5-6 years ago, and it could be closer to 10 years ago because I've lost track of time in the last 10 years. But what I'm really interested in us talking about right now is that distrust in management. I think that's a very astute point to say that, you know, if the players are keeping their injuries mum because they're paid to be competitive, that's one thing. But it's another thing if you look at it through the lens of there is a distrust with their management. And I'm wondering how you guys feel about that in particular. Let's start with you, Trevor. Do you think there's any truth in that? And if so, you know, how do you fix that?
I don't necessarily know how true that is. I mean, I feel like there's just an innate response to trust the management's doing the best for you. That being said, if it starts with players not trusting Matheny directly above them, or even Mabry, and then works its way up into the front office, then sure, there could be some distrust and all that stuff. But I think that I don't know how much that would play in my mind, because if I'm a professional baseball player, one, I'm really happy because my fastball got over 72 miles an hour, which was really nice. But I am hoping to stay as healthy as I can and to get paid by the management, and that involves me playing at the highest level I can. So even if it's just for that personal level, I don't think that the distrust of the management would stop me when it comes to things like injuries, because they are who are going to be paying me and who are going to extend me and all that. So I want to make sure that they know everything that's going on. That way, if I'm not pitching well, they aren't thinking, oh, this guy's lost it. They say, oh, this is bothering him. It might be time to look into it a little bit more.
Fair point. Christian, any thoughts on that one particular point of yours?
I mean, I get what Trevor is saying, but in this particular situation, I think there is a little bit of difference. I really drew it from the fact that, I mean, let's not forget, the big thing was last year was Matheny criticizing Molina for not being game fit. And Molina fires back and says, what are you talking about? I'm a professional. I'm trained to play 162 games, and if I feel like it, that's what I'm going to do. I mean, Matheny has gone on record several times saying players are looking slow or sluggish or whatnot. And, I mean, that can irritate people. And then you take that news and you stack it on top of the fact that you had guys like Wainwright and Martinez that are supposedly hiding the extent of their injuries to these people. I mean, I don't know, like I said, what's going on behind the scenes, but to me, those two signs, I mean, that seems like a cause and effect thing going on. And those signs point to a little bit of a fracture between the players and Matheny in terms of injuries and their performance on the field.
One thing I'd warn you about, Christian, is we don't use the word fracture in baseball. It would just be a strain. Just to keep in mind about the medical staff. It's just a strain. Remember, it's just a strain. There's never really an admission of a break, you see. You know, joking aside, I think you make a really fantastic point. And I had forgotten completely, hadn't made the connection between, you know, Matheny's comments about Yachty last season and what's going on today. I will tell you as well that we could probably point to the Marcell Ozuna stuff as more distrust of the of management in the fact that he had to go watch his own video. And then I think we can even reach back as far as Matt Holliday. And the reason I'm bringing up Matt Holliday is, you know, Matheny was still here or was here and, you know, managing the Cardinals. And at that time, the team, I think, noticed that, as Christian put it, that fracture, to the point that the big leaders of the team, the Matt Hollidays, the Adam Wainwrights, you know, they called team meetings and held team meetings to get guys back on track. And, you know, I'm just wondering if you feel like it started then and that it has perpetuated today. I mean, any thoughts on that, Christian?
I mean, that's a great point. Like you didn't think about the Yachty thing. I certainly didn't really think about that. I mean, like you said, that sort of, I mean, it putting two and two together, it sort of seems like that way, does it not?
Hey, it does to me. What do you think, Trevor?
I mean, when you put it like that, it's really hard to have any sort of rebuttal to it. Not that I would want to. I think you make a really good point. And I think that, I mean, I didn't think about that at all. So it seems like a broken system that needs some sort of fixing going on when you go back that far and can point things out like that.
Yeah, and guys, I want to let you know that I'm going to have a piece coming out probably tonight that's going to point to that fracture. I'm going to play off of what you said, Christian, add to it. I had not thought about some of those things, but yesterday, I'm just going to tease it right here, but yesterday while I was at the Redbirds game, I overheard an interview with the general manager of the Memphis Redbirds as he was talking about Stubby Clapp, and I shared it with you guys in our chat group, but there were some things that were said that really make me begin to heavily wonder if the team, the organization has some plans in play, and I'll talk about those in the piece, as well as, you know, pointing out this triangulation of the distrust between the players and management. So really great discussion. But guys, let's take our last break. We will have about 15 minutes when we come back, and we're going to talk about two players and then potentially go into some best and worst of the St. Louis Cardinals. So stick with us. You are listening to the official Redbird Rants podcast. This is season 2, episode number 12, and you're listening on Blog Talk Radio. Stay with us. All right, thanks for sticking with us. You are listening to the official Redbird Rant podcast on Blog Talk Radio. Season 2, episode number 12. This is the episode, The Return of Our Prodigal Son, in Trevor Huth coming back as a co-editor. And he's with us today. So is Christian May Suzuki. And guys, let's talk about two more players of the Cardinals who are trying to make their way back from the disabled list. The first one up, Matt Bowman. Bowman is now pitching with Memphis in a rehab. But just in general, Trevor, talk to us about Matt Bowman. What are your thoughts? What do you think about him coming on rehab? And what's his future look like?
I've liked Matt Bowman for a while since the Cardinals got him in the Rule 5 draft a couple of years back. He's a ground ball pitcher. That was his role back a few years ago. I'm assuming it hasn't changed because he's got the makeup to be able to do that. Looks like his rehab's going well.
In his last outing, I believe he fired a scoreless inning with Memphis. So I don't know. I think he's obviously just a future in the bullpen. I've been prone to trust him, but as you've probably known, as I've been covering the Brewers, I haven't watched games in a while, so I don't really know what he's been doing lately. I know that back when they first got him, I was a big fan of him. So as long as his rehab goes well, I think he's going to come back and be pretty strong for the Cardinals and fairly reliable, if that's what he's been doing.
Christian, any thoughts on Matthew Bowman?
I don't know. Bowman to me is really one of those guys that sort of encapsulates your and my distaste with Mike Matheny. He's a guy that should have been pitching when he was a lot younger, but sort of just sat in the bullpen. And he's someone now that pitching at the while he is a great pitcher. I mean, let me rephrase that. He has great movement on his pitches. His pitches are very lively. They have a lot of bite to it. So I'm inclined to believe that he should be a lot better than he is. And that's why he's one of the more frustrating players to me. He should have been given more opportunity back a few years ago. And now that he's sort of getting that opportunity, they haven't really worked with him on some of the little things that he needs to do to become, a really, really good pitcher. Things like, so there are just a lot of games where he, as good as his stuff is, he's either trying to pinpoint too much as a strikeout pitcher instead of being the ground ball pitcher that Trevor says that he has the makeup to be, or he just has trouble controlling his pitches. And it's just really frustrating in that the way his stuff moves and the way his stuff looks, if he could just put it in the zone, it would, or if he could just locate it in a proper sequence, even. He doesn't even need to put his slider or whatever that is in the zone, because it breaks so hard. You can get a lot of swings and misses with it, but you got to put it in effective places and you got to be able to control it. And I don't know if it's a matter of control or a matter of just trying to hit the corners too much or aiming or what, but Matthew Bowman could be so much better if he could just get a little bit of a grip on his pitches. And hopefully his time in AAA will allow him to do that.
And, you know, that's a very interesting point, because I've watched him in the last two games that I attended here in Memphis, which were this week, you know, yesterday and then on Saturday night. And, you know, he appeared in both of those games, and I commented pretty heavily on our Twitter account about how his pitches are up, and many of them are up. And he's missing high. He is giving up hits. They are fly balls. And what we saw in St. Louis was he could be brought in and be relied upon to get a ground ball, get a double play, that sort of thing. And that was very much the case in the first two seasons that he was with the Cardinals under that Rule 5 draft. Knowing that, you guys, and knowing that he's, you know, missing in the up capacity, what do you think that tells you about his rehab? Start with you, Trevor.
Rehab's a tricky thing. I've been doing some work with the Toledo Mudhens, and while I've been there, we've had Jordan Zimmerman come through on rehab, Heimer Candelario come through on rehab, and Alex Wilson came back in rehab. So I've seen several rehab starts, and I want to pull out Jordan Zimmerman, because in his first rehab start, he gave up 7 runs and I think recorded 2 outs. And after the game, you read things on him, and Detroit's happy with how it went, because it's not necessarily results based. They're looking for certain things, and mostly what these rehab appearances are for are so the players can be throwing without in live competition without game. They don't put as much emphasis on where the ball goes, as long as they're not walking everybody they face. So it's hard to read into rehab like that, but if he's missing up, that's not good, especially because he is the ground ball pitcher. He's, along with an injury, one of the reasons that Seth Maness was decided to be let go, because he was going to step into that role, if I'm remembering correctly from a couple years ago. But he
I'm missing up is an issue, but I don't think that it's something that the Cardinals are we should be worried about as of right now when in terms of rehab.
Fair enough. Christian, any thoughts?
I don't put too much in rehab like Trevor said, and I think a great recent point to that is Alex Reyes. I mean, Alex Reyes looked great, looked healthy in his rehab, and suddenly didn't in his first game. So putting a lot on the rehab is a lot to ask, but the fact that he is missing in the same spots, he's missing at the same sort of elevation, I mean, it may indicate maybe a slight hitch in his mechanics. Maybe he accidentally, subconsciously sort of shifted something. It's more of a matter of him looking at it. It's more of a case-by-case basis. I haven't really watched Bowman or anything like that. I haven't seen if there's any noticeable difference in the way he's throwing the ball. But if he looks the same, if there's nothing too herky-jerky, too different, or like too off about his motion, I would wait until maybe he gets back into the majors to figure out exactly what's going on with the idea of him missing high. Because at the end of the day, he could, as I said, part of me thinks that he's trying to aim his pitches, and he understands that his stuff has the bite on it to have him be a strikeout pitcher. And one of the biggest, newest strikeout pitches is high fastball. He could be trying to work with that. I'm not sure. I can't really pass judgment, like I said, until I watch him in a Major League Baseball game.
Yeah, very fair. I'll tell you guys that I did not notice in those last two games anything different about his delivery. He looked like the same Matt Bowman. And of course I'm not watching him on television where you can see up close. I'm watching from the press box, but from up there he looks like the same guy. And I think there's probably some truth to what you're saying, Christian, about trying to work that high strike to get the swing and miss. In defense of him, he's also got, not bad catchers that he's throwing to, but he's not throwing to Yadi. He's throwing to, Stephen Barron, who's supposed to be a really great catcher and made some huge flubs yesterday that were more little league than AAA. And then he's got Carson Kelly, who is supposed to be the heir apparent to Yadi, who does a serviceable job catching. But, his ability to call a game and maybe even call a pen. Guys, we've got about 10 minutes. And what I want to do is I definitely want to talk to him. If we can keep it to about 5 minutes so that we can get to some bests and worsts. And that is Greg Holland. Let's talk about Greg Holland, his rehab. Just so you guys know, yesterday was atrocious. He came out, he had walked a guy, given up a double, and then allowed a 3-run home run that put Reno, who, by the way, is the AAA team of the Arizona Diamondbacks, and they actually have Yosemite Tomas playing with them right now, and Tomas took him deep for a 3-run home run to allow Reno to take the lead and go on to win. So Holland yesterday was saddled with the blown save and the loss. You guys, what are your reactions to Greg Holland in general and just where he is right now? And we'll start with you, Christian.
Man. If Matt Bowman is frustrating, then Greg Holland makes me want to shoot myself into Mars. I mean, he has the talent, and I saw him have the talent. It really boggles my mind because I know he has the talent. And, a lot of people are saying that the end of his last year carried into the beginning of this year, and that he's sort of just done, and it was a flash in the frying pan. But I'm just so hard pressed with the way his stuff works, just the way it looked last year. It just makes it so difficult for me to believe that. And I mean, a lot of it I believe right now is just mental and him sort of getting back into that. I really don't know at this point if he can, because, I mean, this has been really bad. And this was – the AAA stint was supposed to be the time that he sort of recalibrated himself under the lowest of pressures. But perhaps that pressure of needing to perform in AAA sort of overwhelmed him a little bit. And, I mean, if it's getting to that point, then it's tough to put him in the closer spot. Now – obviously, people have been chattering about releasing him. And my question is to those people is, what good is that going to do? Because we're still paying him, and we're not getting any cap relief next year. Unless the Cardinals are really going to saddle on extra money this year for Manny Machado, there is literally no benefit that comes from cutting Greg Holland. So it's tough to watch, and it's sad to see that he's just hasn't been able to perform, but there's no point in giving up on him, because what do we get to gain from that?
Yeah, and I'm right there with you, Christian. My father yesterday actually said we should. And help another team get into the postseason. I don't see that happening either. And I mean, just as a quick side note, that, you know, hey, look at Jed Jerko. What do the Padres have to think about Jed Jerko? You know, because they're still paying a little of the salary, I believe. This is the final season for that. But back to Holland, Trevor, what are your thoughts?
It baffles my mind, like everybody else. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was an all-star pitcher in Colorado, which I can't imagine is the easiest thing to do in that profession. But, you know, 41 saves, and his strikeout numbers are way down from last year, and he's not pitching well, and he goes to AAA, he's not doing well either. That worries me a little more than Bowman necessarily, because Bowman's coming back from a finger injury. He's coming back from a hip injury. And pitchers in the lower half is, I mean, obviously you worry more about shoulders and fat, but and stuff like that. But the lower half, as far as delivery and him missing spots enough to where people are taking him deep and making hard contact, is a little more worrisome than a finger injury. But I don't know. I mean, you're not going to gain anything from releasing him, but he's not getting any better. At least it seems like he's not getting much better. And if that's something in his head, then that's going to be a lot harder to figure out. If that's something in his mechanics, you think they would be working on it. So it's frustrating. I mean, he's a three-time All-Star. I don't know necessarily he was a flash in the pan over the last few years, but you have a guy who can pitch really well in the worst pitcher's atmosphere in the league, and comes to the Cardinals, and now he's just something's off with him, and no one can figure out what. So I, in a word, it's just frustrating.
Hey guys, I have a solution I want to present. And it's actually something that my father brought up yesterday, and I hadn't thought about it. And initially I said no, but what if the Cardinals were to send him to Springfield to AA? And here's why I'm saying that. There's two reasons, actually. One is, let's send him down somewhere where he will start to have success and get that, you know, the taste of blood again. The second is, if I'm not mistaken, Jason Simontacci is in AA as the pitching instructor. And the organization absolutely raves on his ability to pinpoint issues with pitchers, especially young pitchers. Now, Holland's not a young pitcher, but they just scream the praise for Simontacci. And I would love to say, I'd love to see what would happen if Holland got some time with Simontacci. Either one of you, what do you think?
I mean, if he continues to perform like this, there's really no reason not to. I would hold back simply because of the way that he basically didn't want to hit the minor leagues. It was sort of a pride thing. So I would give him maybe one more game Just to sort of, I mean, you don't want to judge him on the first impression. I think you should give him at least one more chance to sort of sort himself out in AAA. And, I mean, if he has another outing like this or another outing where he can't really show that he can get guys out in an easy and consistent manner, I mean, sending him to AA with a guy who has the experience in pinpointing issues and will have boatloads of tape to look over from his good years. I mean, there's no reason that he shouldn't if he continues to pitch the way he is.
Yeah,
any
I would
thoughts
agree.
On that,
yeah, I agree. I think it's worth maybe waiting on. I think it's worth a shot if he's not pitching well. You got to figure something out. I know that he doesn't want to go to the minors or be in the minors, but you're paying him $14 million and he's, you know, what is his walk rate at 10 per nine or something around there. So I don't think that he really has much of a say in that or should have much of a say in that regardless. And if you need to send him to the minors to get a little bit of, you know, AA to get a little bit of that, that killer instinct back or whatever, just go for it. I mean, I know he was an all-star last year, but he's not an all-star this year. In fact, I think I could post his numbers this year if I were playing for the Cardinals. So I think that's worrisome.
Yeah, fair point. Okay, guys, we're in extra time right now because we were going to record for just an hour. So we've got a couple of minutes of extra time. What I'd like for you to do is each one of you give me your top pitcher with the Cardinals and your top offensive player with the Cardinals. And let's start with that, and we're going to start with you, Trevor.
Top pitcher is Miles Michaelis. I was a huge fan of him coming in. Top batter is, and I don't know if you want to call this performance-based or not, but I honestly love guys who will go the extra mile for themselves, even if they're forced to. I'm going to say Marcelo Zuna just because he's been watching his own tape and he's been figuring out, and I love smart baseball guys, and he clearly is one. So,
fun. Christian, your top pitcher and top batter.
Well, I hate to be a copycat for this one, but my top pitcher is Miles Michaelis. I mean, it's not simply because of his performance, but of the way that he pitches and that he doesn't walk people. And with all the control problems that the Cardinals had for years, and with Carlos Martinez on the other side of the rotation, it's really nice to have someone who throws strikes. For batters, I would have to go with Jose, honestly. He's arguably the worst fielder of all time, but Jose Martinez has certainly done well for himself in terms of hitting. His power is a little bit lower than I would expect, but the way he's been able to see the ball, and in particular, the way he's been able to get himself out of any short slump that he may have, I think that sort of realm of consistency has been really good for the Cardinals.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to 100% agree with you, Christian, and you too, Trevor. My great arm is Michaelis, and the they're still there.